You're listening to Microbe Talk, the podcast from the Microbiology Society. For today's episode, we're going to be doing something a little different, and you're not going to be hearing much more from me. As part of our A Sustainable Future policy project, my lovely colleagues in the policy team have produced three special episodes of Microbe Talk, where they will be discussing some of the ways microbiology can be used to tackle global issues. Without further ado, I'm going to hand you over to Hannah, who will be talking about soil health.
Thank you for joining us today as we discuss the importance of soil health for the Sustainable Development Goals and the crucial role that microbiology plays in this area. As we will hear in more detail during this episode, soil health is crucial to many of the SDGs, including Goal 2, Zero Hunger, as it is vital for increasing yields and feeding our growing population in a sustainable manner. It also plays an important role in other goals, including Goal 6, Clean Water and Sanitation, and Goal 13, Climate Action. Today we will be talking to two scientists working in the area of soil health, Dr. Ellie Harrison from the University of Sheffield and Luke Hillary from Bangor University. Our first guest today is Dr. Ellie Harrison, who is a research fellow at the University of Sheffield. Today she will be talking to us about her work in soil microbiomes and how engaging with stakeholders can benefit science. Hi Ellie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. First of all, can you tell me a bit about your research?
Thank you very much for having me. I am a couple of years into my NERC fellowship and I'm working at the University of Sheffield. I've been really focused on understanding the interactions between bacteria and their mobile genetic elements, all the plasmids and the phages and the intragenomic elements that buzz around microbial genomes. Most of that work has been done on plasmids, and I've looked at how this evolutionary relationship can affect that process of horizontal gene transfer. And now I've moved over onto rhizobia and want to understand how relationships with their mobile genetic elements, their plasmids and phages, shape the symbiosis that they have with legumes. So really, I've come to this purely out of scientific curiosity as an evolutionary biologist, because rhizobia, this amazing evolutionary conundrum. But it just turns out that they happen to be really important.
Can you explain what rhizobia are for those listeners who haven't heard of them before?
Rhizobia are nitrogen-fixing bacteria. Generally, they are bacteria that associate with legume plants, so your peas, your beans, all your soya, and then a load of other non-edible legumes. The rhizobia form these root nodules in the roots of the legumes, and there they sit and they fix atmospheric nitrogen. And this process of turning N2 in the air into something that plants can access and turn into proteins that then we or our livestock can eat, this is really only being done by bacteria, so by biological nitrogen fixation, or by the Haber-Bosch process, which is where we make chemical fertilizer. And that process is just an environmental catastrophe for both polluting the environment and also carbon usage.
With this focus on nitrogen-fixing bacteria, how have the Sustainable Development Goals impacted your research?
As soon as you transition to a system that is more obviously applied to the real world, you just start thinking about how your work can be applied to these kind of goals. For example, through the UN, but the government has its own goals. All the funding agencies have these similar sustainability goals written into their key themes. When presenting with those, you naturally start to see where you fit in. And rhizobia legume symbiosis is really crucial for both feeding the world as we try and simultaneously deal with climate change, but also protecting the environment.
You mentioned there the importance of feeding the world, which fits into Goal 2 of the Sustainable Development Goal, Zero Hunger. And you've mentioned moving to maybe more applied solutions to these problems. What are some of the key ways that microbiology can help us to feed the growing population in a sustainable manner?
This rhizobia legume symbiosis is so important if we want to transition to a more sort of sustainable, low carbon source of protein in our diets. We have this concept of healthy soils and disease suppressive soils, which I think most people are now quite familiar with because they've really kind of got into the vocabulary. People talk about it on the news. But if you ask a soil microbiologist or soil biologist, they will happily tell you that we've no idea what that means. We know what the outcome looks like, means good crops, but we really don't know the processes, the ecology, the functions that are working together to underlie that outcome. So we really need a lot more like discovery science to understand both the molecular biology and the functional microbiology of these communities, but also I think a lot more input from the ecologists and the evolutionary biologists than we've seen before to help understand these systems as ecosystems and not as some kind of functional component in the landscape. My sort of approach, my kind of lab to the wild approach, or at least to me it's very wild, I'm kind of quite narrowly focused on specific relationships, so specifically how rhizobia are functioning with their phage or their plasma populations and how that influences the legume association. And there we can be hypothesis testing in the lab and then observing what's happening in the real world. But we also need people looking at a very top-down kind of community-level approach.
As you say, your background is a much more lab-based approach. Do you think this gives you a different perspective to people who may be coming from a more applied side to begin with?
I've been trying really hard to establish a system which gives me the tractability of a lab system with a plant system. So I'm using clover and the bacteria Rhizobium leguminosarum, which is a really common study system. I think I've been very pushy about doing this, and maybe I could have wasted my time, we'll find out. But I think I might have set up a system that allows me to test things that would have just been assumed to just be a little bit too difficult to do. So you bring a kind of a drive to set up something that maybe people had thought was a little bit unnecessary. And I think my work with my previous labs and the group that I was in there, where we had this amazing team of scientists all working together on microbial mobile genetic element interactions, I think we really see this as a community, as an ecosystem. So mobile genetic elements play this really important role in microbial evolution.
Shifting focus a bit, I saw that earlier this year you attended the Oxford Real Farming Conference, and you also talk about engaging with a range of stakeholders as part of your research, farmers, landowners, maybe also policymakers. Can you tell us more about how your work influences these different stakeholders?
I really would say that it's the opposite. Going to the Oxford Real Farming Conference was a real eye-opener, and I was so excited. I knew it was going to be pretty fun, but it was both fun and just kind of mind-blowing in some ways, which probably to a lot of people that work with farmers will sound very naive. The community at this conference, which I should say, I guess if people don't know about it, is the conference that's kind of like a little rebellious younger sibling to the Oxford Farming Conference, which is much more big landowners, traditional farming methods. This is a community of very innovative farmers, many of them much smaller scale, who are looking at ways of doing farming a bit differently. They're all scientists, as far as I'm concerned. They might be non-academic scientists, but they're all testing stuff out. They're all curious, using trial and error to develop new practices to maintain their land, to understand the ecosystems that they're taking care of and to work with them to make them both more productive and more sustainable. And I think if you want to know how we approach the future of farming, you shouldn't be coming to scientists. People should be going to see what is working at smaller scales and asking how we can translate that to wider systems. I went there trying to work out if I did have information that could be helpful. I still am not sure if I do. We have a really exciting PhD project with my student Mary, who is hopefully going to go and work with farmers, talk to farmers, understand the ways in which they're already working with their soils, and to maybe we can augment that with explaining the biology behind the sort of stuff that they're finding is working and co-developing those practices to make them more effective.
It sounds like in the future we need to work in an interdisciplinary manner and be collaborative if we're going to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals.
There are plenty of solutions out there. I don't know, like, where I really fall down is knowing what's practical to, like, feed the world versus what's lovely and sustainable on a small scale. But a lot of solutions could be overlooked if we assume that the people who are the experts are scientists, people with PhDs, because it's not the case.
You talked about farmers and landowners, but what about policymakers? And particularly, what do you think the role of scientists is in influencing or providing information to enable decision making?
I haven't worked with policymakers. My colleagues have, and I have friends who took the civil service route, so are working in policy. So what I can say from talking with them is that we need everything to be very clear and concise if it's going to be picked up by government. It frankly is just impossible to get anything nuanced through. I thought that the new policy, the agricultural policy released, was it last year, was actually surprisingly enlightened.
Yes, so the Agriculture Bill was first introduced last year and brought back under the new government after last year's election, and it's now making its way through the House of Commons. It seeks to change the system of agricultural subsidies from one where the money is mostly given out based on the amount of land owned to a system where farmers are rewarded for public goods such as healthy soils and provisions for pollinators.
So there's definitely an understanding now that ecosystems provide functions and that we need to protect and maintain what we have and maybe heal it a bit. But clearly that is a sort of example where that message has been quite simplified. So now we have this idea of, like, we need to sort of protect and rewild landscape and move it away from farming, where I think there are, at least, you know, from the exposure that I've had, it seems like there are solutions that you can manage both. You can have a productive food producing landscape. There's also a functional ecosystem.
It sounds like there's a lot of exciting science going on in this area, including, of course, your own. But there are also many unknowns and barriers. Can you tell us more about how these are preventing us from achieving healthy soils?
Well, so, I mean, as I said, one of the big barriers is we really don't know what that term means. So we should probably have a look at that. The thing that I already started talking about, and I guess is my bugbear, is the idea that there is a solution. There is a solution. So rhizobia, the sort of world of rhizobia, a real key example of this, where as the kind of science industrial approach to having poor nitrogen fixation, natural nitrogen fixation in soils, so where farmers are having to add fertilizer to grow legumes, is to chuck in usually one strain of rhizobia that has been shown under particular circumstance to be really, really highly functional. But I'm an ecologist, so that always seemed a little bit unlikely to me. Everything that we know about ecology tells us that there's so much context dependency of how well or productive a particular genotype or species is in an ecosystem. It can depend both on the community that surrounds it and on the environment that it's in. But I really think the maybe a better approach is not try and use one size fits all for different soils, and instead go from the sort of bottom up and work at producing ways of improving soils that farmers on the farms can be doing that is effectively bespoke to each landscape.
Do you think for farmers it's harder for them to think about using microbiology for measuring healthy soils as opposed to other methods that maybe are easier to see and quantify?
I'm part of the Institute of Sustainable Foods in Sheffield, which is a brilliant new institute across faculties in the university. And so that gives me access to social scientists, policy people, engineers, and importantly, people who know who have experience of working with farmers. I feel that the idea of the microbiome is very much a thing. You're right that like how farmers relate to soil can be quite different, but it needs to be simple and it needs to be quick. And you're not going to get a system where a farmer is doing amplicon sequencing necessarily. Although you could see a future where they sample and they send off just soil samples or something. But I don't think we need to get to that point. I mean, one of the analogies that we use when thinking about it is things like all of the ways that we work with microbes, like sourdough. You know, everyone's making sourdough now because they want to bake bread because we're all facing the apocalypse. That's a microbial community that somebody that you don't know anything that's about what it is in there. You just know about its function. And you have measures for looking at whether it's functioning and healthy and is going to do the job that you want it to do. So I want to get to the point where we can do that with microbial functions without necessarily having to really dig down into any of the complexity.
You make soil microbiome sound really exciting. And I was reading on your website that you say it's almost like biological warfare between microbes. What are some of the common misconceptions from the public about soil microbiology, and how can you engage with them with this often overlooked environment?
I obviously think that microbes are really cool, and microbial communities are really exciting places, and I really do see it as being this kind of wild, wild west of microbes all communicating with each other, fighting each other. You throw your mobile genetic elements in there and you've got all this delicious exploitation and parasitism and killing and death. So it's a violent and dynamic world. We have picked up this message of good bacteria and bad bacteria. So now we've shifted to a place where people do understand that microbes can be good. But it's a very binary world of these are good and these are bad for you. Whereas obviously microbial communities are much more nuanced. Something that can be good or commensal can suddenly shift to be parasitic. Rhizobia can be parasitic. They live this incredibly complex competitive life outside in the soil, and then they have this relationship with the plant. How you translate that, I'm still working on. I do try and talk to, when I've gone into schools and I try to talk to kids about microbial communities, I try and paint this picture. Sometimes it works. I did have one kid in a school shout down the corridor at me, "Microbes are cool!" right at the end, which was like, well, that's probably the biggest win of my career. But generally, it's quite a hard sell. And my dream is to develop ways of getting people in touch with their inner microbe.
And finally, what do you see as the next big thing in soil microbiology? And can we achieve this by 2030 when the deadline is for the Sustainable Development Goals?
One thing that I think is really interesting is the idea of the interactions in the soil, right? So if we agree that the agricultural systems are ecosystems, and interactions between species are what ties ecosystems together and makes them resilient and functional. And the one part of that ecosystem that we have really messed around with is the plants. So we have bred plants to be incredibly good producers of biomass above ground when you flood them with nutrients, with inorganic fertilizers and stuff. So I think one really exciting thing that will happen now is that people are looking to sort of reform that connection that plants have lost with the microbial community at their roots. So we've just blindly bred plants without thinking about making sure that they're maintaining that relationship with bacteria, that communication that they need to have to recruit the bacteria that they need to their roots. So we can. Some people are doing that, I know, by trying to engineer plants to have specific relationships with microbes, or to engineer different microbes. For instance, make new rhizobia, make wheat be able to fix nitrogen. Maybe my newfound love of holistic approaches means that I think we should be going back to more ancient plant varieties, crop varieties, and looking at trying to breed some of those traits back in. to be honest, I think that what you'll end up with is potentially lower yields than we are used to, but you should have more resilience. And over the span of and the way that the climate is going, ultimately that could end up being more important.
Well, thank you so much, Ellie, for speaking to me today and telling us all about your research. It was so interesting. Our second guest today is Luke Hillary, a PhD researcher from Bangor University. Luke's PhD is focused on viral contamination in the UK's food and water supply. And today we will be chatting about the importance and challenges of studying viruses in the soil. Hi Luke, thank you for joining me today. Can you tell me a bit more about your PhD?
I'm currently based at Bangor University and I'm working with James McDonald and David Jones on the effects of adding biosolids into soil and how that affects the viral populations that we can find there. This is a PhD project that is part of the STARS Soil Science CDT programme.
What sort of questions are you trying to answer with your research into viruses in the soil?
So the questions that I'm trying to answer occur on a number of different levels. So initially, the project started off looking at how the addition of biosolids affects those viruses that we find in soils and whether we are actually transferring human pathogens into soil. However, our knowledge of the way that viruses work in soils is at quite a sort of a low level compared to what we know about bacteria and fungi and other microorganisms. So fundamentally, what I'm interested in is also what's going on in soils from a viral point of view and how different changes and different effects that humans can put onto the soil might affect those viral communities and what role they might play in the broader microbial picture.
Can you explain to me what biosolids are for people who aren't aware?
So biosolids is the cute, fluffy name that we give to sewage sludge. So it is the solid waste product that comes out of the wastewater treatment system. And that is treated to remove as many pathogens as we can. But then it gets spread on land as a fertilizer. It's a really good source of nitrogen and phosphorus. And it can also improve soil texture and other soil properties.
Are viruses harder to remove from wastewater than other microbes?
It's very dependent on which virus you're looking at. Some viruses are particularly sensitive to the wastewater treatment process, and so they degrade quite quickly, whereas there are others that are much hardier. So it does depend a lot on what you're looking at.
What are some of the challenges that you face within this research?
So detecting the viruses in the first place can be a little bit difficult, and it depends on what method you're using. But then also you've got the issue of the broad viral diversity that you see. So viruses aren't just DNA based. They can exploit different forms of RNA and DNA as well to form their genomes. And so if you're looking at the DNA viral community, you can potentially completely miss the RNA viruses. And that is one aspect that my research is trying to look at, is how can we detect a broader range of what is in the viral community in soil in the first place.
How does your research address some of the UN Sustainable Development Goals?
Looking at the UN Sustainable Development Goals, there's a number of different ones that this research actually falls under, but I was just going to focus on three. Zero hunger, goal number two. Number three, good health and well-being. And number six, clean water and sanitation. So our understanding of how agriculture relates to what's going on below ground is really important. And viruses are often missed within this complex process. And so what my research is hoping to do is shed some light on to how our impact can affect what's going on below ground with this sort of missing piece. And by focusing on the use of biosolids in particular, we're looking at how our agriculture and food production can be linked into clean water and sanitation and also more broadly public health as well.
Is there a way that these goals are shaping the field of soil health?
So from the soil health point of view, there's a real drive to try and understand how our farming practices affect the microbiology of what's going on in the soil, and hopefully getting those to actually work together rather than potentially against each other. And also trying to understand the complex interactions that go on between the microbial community and any crop plants that you might be growing at that time, and what affects more complex interventions such as organic manures biochar, et cetera, might have on the microbial community, and not just looking at crop yield, but also soil health.
Okay, and finally, what do you see as the next big thing in soil microbiology? And can we achieve this by 2030 when the deadline is for the Sustainable Development Goals?
Within soil health, I would say microbiology is going to really affect the way in which we view agriculture and getting our agricultural practices to work with the natural soil microbiome instead of potentially against it.
Thank you so much to both our guests today on this special episode of Microbe Talk. Our guests were Dr. Ellie Harrison from the University of Sheffield and Luke Hillary from Bangor University. It was great to hear about two different areas of soil health research and how important it is to the Sustainable Development Goals. Remember, if your research relates to soil health and you would like to be involved in our A Sustainable Future project, then please get in touch. We are collecting case studies on interesting research in this area and would like to hear from you. Please visit our website for more information. Thank you for listening today, and look out for our next podcast episode in this series, where we will be talking to Professor Alison Smith from the University of Cambridge and Emily Wojcik, a PhD researcher from the University of Manchester. The topic will be the circular economy and its importance for achieving the Sustainable Development Goals. Thank you so much for joining us today and listening.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and keep an eye out for future episodes with Eva and Emily on circular economy and antimicrobial resistance. If you would like to find out more about the Microbiology Society's A Sustainable Future project, check out the links in the podcast description below. Until next time.